Good morning. This is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Ladies and gentlemen, this morning we're going to deal with a very serious topic and to talk about the situation that has occurred in South Bend, Indiana. On the line with us, we have Apostle Patton, who is also the president of the NAACP South Bend, Indiana chapter as our guest today. Apostle Patton, welcome to the program, and thank you for interrupting your very busy schedule to talk about this very urgent matter of the recent shooting of the black citizen by a white police officer in South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah, Darrell, thank you for having me. Certainly we're saddened and troubled in our community in regards to this police-involved shooting and the death of an African-American male in our community.
Last Sunday, you and Mayor Pete Buttigieg held a town hall meeting to discuss the black residents' concerns about the police department being racist. From your perspective, what was the objective of that meeting, and did you achieve that objective, and what next steps have come out of that meeting that you had last Sunday, which was all over the globe? It was all over the news globally.
Thank you. The objective to that meeting was to allow for our community, while we're in the grieving process, to be able to share their pain and to be able to communicate to us things that they have not ordinarily been able to share with us. And so it was to give them a platform. We recognized that after the shooting, the past couple days, there were some meetings that we attended that had grassroots people there, that our community was hurting in a bad way. And they were expressing themselves at the gatherings that we gathered at, one at our South Bend Police Department. There was a march there. They had an opportunity to express themselves as well, and as well at our city-county building. And then there was a gathering held at the Martin Luther King Center here, and they were able to express themselves there. And so I received a phone call on this past Saturday from Mayor Pete Buttigieg, asking me to come alongside of him and his staff to do a town hall meeting on Sunday. I agreed to that because I believed, after talking with our mayor, that there was a need to create a platform. And in subsequent meetings, we had been talking about creating platforms for our city to be able to communicate to us their pain, but as well for us to be able to communicate how things are going on the back end in regards to what we're doing to address the challenge in our community. And so certainly the town hall meeting was needed. And our community showed out in huge numbers, and it gave them an opportunity to express their pain. We were there to listen, and that's what we were there for. We listened, we took notes, we recorded the gathering, and obviously you're aware that we have national news media venues here, and due to our mayor running for presidential election, and so that of course has increased the news media support and opportunities in our community. And so they were there to be a part of that process. And there were some things that were shared with us that expressed with us to show us right where our community is.
That is excellent. And I'm very appreciative for you to come on our program so that we can try to get your message even out even more. The recent deadly shooting of the resident, Mr. Eric Jack Logan, a black man, by police officer Ryan O'Neill, who is a 19-year veteran and who is also white. Can you share with our audience the details of how this unfortunate event came about?
So the prosecutor has shared with us that an officer was called out to an apartment complex, Central Apartments in South Bend, kind of close to our downtown area. The call was made in that someone was breaking in cars allegedly. and the officer arrived, did not turn their lights on for whatever reason, got out of the car, decided at whatever moment they decided not to turn their cameras on to go into the parking lot. There they found Mr. Eric Logan rummaging in a vehicle, supposedly, and the officer confronted him, and supposedly the officer asked questions to Eric, and in the matter of minutes, the officer pulled his weapon and killed Mr. Logan, alleged, or from what we understand from our prosecutor.
And so, like you said, in a minute and a half, this officer decided to use lethal force. And I believe he shot him twice.
That shot at him twice. One bullet hit him in the stomach. And I guess the bullet lodged in his spine. And so he would have been, in my guesstimation, in great pain. Supposedly he had a knife in his hand. He was bent over in the car, so that meant that his feet were flat on the ground. And so when the officer asked him a question, he pulled his body out of the car and turned to the officer. Allegedly, he had a knife in his hand. The officer felt threatened in some sort of way, drew his weapon at some point, which we don't know what point that was. Again, there is no camera to record any of this. This is based upon what the officer has said. And then the officer decides in a minute and a half to use lethal force. This also took place at 3:23 a.m. in the morning. After the shooting, Mr. Logan was taken to the hospital. He arrived there at 3:36.
From what I understand, you had indicated that there were other officers that came to the scene, but their body cameras were not on as well.
So we're not sure of that as of yet. The investigation continues, but they, meaning our prosecutor, this is still under investigation. And so no one has been able to answer that question as to, you know, any film footage from cameras of other officers who arrived at the scene.
Well, I'm sure, because as I indicated to you some years ago, I was an auxiliary police mm-hmm. officer in Downers Grove, Illinois, which we drove by ourselves, we carried, and we were trained by the Illinois State Police. But sure. The dispatcher would know where all the cars, they have a geo tracker on all their cars. So, sure. So
sure technology has to be in even greater, as you talk about, you know, your past experience, you know, now the bells and whistles have increased. Even with cameras, I understand we have like what they call the middle of the road type cameras. And so for us, the cameras go off when you turn on the lights. They go off when you drive somewhere approximately around 70 miles an hour, or you have to turn them on yourself. So now the cameras have multiple types of ways to be able to be turned on. They can be turned on if you have that technology. They can be turned on by the shot of a gun. They can be turned on the other ways that I've made mention of. They can be turned on if you open your door. There are multiple ways now that cameras can be activated without an officer having to make the decision to turn it on.
I see. I got a question for you. Has there been any discussion about the alleged car that Mr. Logan was allegedly in? Whose car was that? Who was that car registered to?
Yeah, so the car was registered to a gentleman by the name of Nepper. And that's come into question for our community. Our community has had supposedly some bad experiences with him. It has been cited that allegedly he could have some racism tactics. And then there's some documents that have come out since then to show that he was involved in an incident that displayed some racism. However, it did result in being inconclusive or unconclusive, whichever way that goes. Nothing, of course, happened with him in that incident.
And has there been any discussion with the prosecutor about giving you and your constituents access to the dispatch tapes to hear the dialogue between the officer and dispatch?
So those tapes are available now. So they're out there where people can listen to them.
And is there anything that gives any more evidence about or facts about what exactly happened that early morning?
No, not really. You know, there are some things that raise questions, I mean, throughout that process. You know, we are all, you know, just trying to figure this out. You know, this horrific incident that has occurred in our community, we're still hurting from it like it just happened an hour ago. And we're still trying to cope with it. We're still trying to wrap our minds around it, as well. Just unbelievable that the officer chose to use deadly force based upon what was occurring. Now, that's not to say what I just said, not to say that, you know, because we weren't there and we can't see what occurred, that the officer was in a dangerous situation that, you know, obviously led to him, according to policy, being able to use his weapon.
Wow. And I understand that Mr. Logan was a father, a husband, father, and grandfather. How is his family doing and dealing with this unfortunate situation?
Yeah, so I've been able to meet with his daughter, Danielle Logan, on a couple of different occasions. We just spoke on the phone yesterday as well. She seems to be coming along. Obviously, she's grieving, and she's disturbed behind the loss of her father. But things are coming together for her in relation to the funeral and them moving forward as well. I've been able to talk to Eric's brothers, who one of them are a member of my church. And so I've been able to pray with them. I've been able to console some of the family and be in their presence to address the grieving that they're going through as well. Each of them are grieving in their own kind of way, and each of them are feeling some kind of way about this. But I will say that the family has been very respectful to our mayor, to our police chief, to our city as well. They've kind of helped to quieten the storm because our city really exploded after this incident. And so they have been the voice of reason along with, you know, leadership within our community to help kind of quieten things down. But still, you know, there's questions. And so yes, the family is moving forward as best they can. The funeral is going to be this coming Saturday. And so they will be able to properly bury Eric and as well honor him in the way that they want to honor him.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Apostle Patton, who is the president of the NAACP South Bend, Indiana chapter. We're discussing the very unfortunate incident where Mr. Eric Jack Logan, a black man, was shot and killed by police officer Ryan, a 19-year veteran who is white. And Apostle Patton, I do have a question going back to the timeline. Mm-hmm. So it was dispatched at 3:23, and he arrived at the hospital at 3:36. That's 13 minutes. But you also explained to me that instead of calling for the ambulance, they did what we have learned is a load and go. 13 minutes, that's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering why the officer did not call a ambulance with paramedics who could have given him care at the scene and transported him to the hospital.
Sure. I'm just learning about the load and go. It is a tactic that is used across the country now when officers feel like a person is in imminent danger of death. And if they feel that they can get an individual or a group of people to a medical facility faster than having an ambulance come out and take a person to a medical facility, then they use that tactic called load and go. It has been used in our community, from what I understand and listening to our chief of police. It has been used a few times. It's not something that happens every time that we've had some situation occur. However, in this situation, they chose to use that tactic. And because they did use the tactic, they were able to get Mr. Logan to Memorial Hospital in 50 seconds. So if you think about an ambulance coming, which they did make the call for an ambulance, but it hadn't arrived, and whether that's 1 minute, 2 minutes, or 3 minutes before the ambulance gets there, they have already gotten the person to the hospital to receive immediate care in a 50-second time span.
Right, but the 50-second time span is the time that the officer put the car in gear and drove to the hospital. I'm curious, how did he actually load him into the car? Did he have help to load Mr. Logan's body into the, which I would assume was the back seat of the car?
I would assume that was the back seat, as you would. I have no idea because, again, there's no camera footage of what occurred there. And so if it was that they put him in the back seat, then, of course, and what I do understand is that Mr. Logan was living at that time because the officers have said, the officer has said that he was talking while he was on the ground. And so he was alive when they put him in the car. Mm-hmm. I don't know what transpired from the parking lot of that apartment complex to the to Memorial Hospital. And so, yeah, that's all questionable because there was no footage from a camera that now, I'm aware of.
Right. Now, Mayor Buttigieg has indicated in a statement that he has requested for the United States Attorney General's office to the Civil Rights Division to do a probe. Was that an informal request or was that a formal request? And if it was a formal request, has the Department of Justice visited South Bend, Indiana as of yet?
I'm not aware that the Department of Justice has been here. Out of our conversations from right after the shooting, probably the Wednesday or Thursday, we started talking about DOJ. We have a entity called Faith in Indiana that brought that to the table. Certainly the NAACP has come alongside of them to impress upon our mayor and our community to bring DOJ into this as an independent investigative entity. And we already have three others involved with that as well. Our prosecutor has since called for a special prosecutor to come in to investigate further this incident. And so our mayor shared with our community that he would write to DOJ and ask them to get involved. I have not heard, you know, whether or not they have come to the table as of yet and whether that letter has been written and sent out to them.
I see. And, you know what? Going back to Officer O'Neill, it was reported in the press that he was treated for minor injuries at the hospital and released.
Yes.
Do we know the extent of those minor injuries and how they happened?
I don't. What I have heard is that the knife that Eric had hit him in the forearm somehow. And then, of course, it is normal procedure for an officer to go to a medical facility after some sort of incident like this, whether they have an injury or not. There's some things that need to be checked out. So that's a normal scenario. However, it has been mentioned that his forearm was hit with the knife. Don't know the severity of what took place there. That's not come out to say whether the knife was lodged in his forearm. They have used the word bruise, that he had a bruise on his forearm from the knife.
And also, I'm just curious, since he did the load and go, and I'm sure Mr. Logan was bleeding, was there any blood on the officer's uniform? And has that officer's uniform been put in evidence?
So that I'm not aware of. Again, the investigation is ongoing, so we don't have all of the pieces to the puzzle. We have some pieces, but we don't have all the pieces. So, you know, there's still more information to come. That could be, you know, the next 2 weeks. That could be the next 30 days before we have more information. But each week we have received some sort of information, but now with all the transition happening, another prosecutor coming in to investigate and calling DOJ in and others, you know, that may extend or elongate the investigation.
Right. And so, in understanding the population, I understand is Hispanic and blacks make up about 40% of the population there, but I believe that it was reported that the police department is comprised of 90% of white officers. And right. Apparently there's been a program to put in that Mayor Buttigieg has put in place to hire more minority black officers, Hispanic officers. Why hasn't that taken place? What is holding up folks from hiring more officers that reflect the community?
Yeah, so that's a challenge around the country that communities are having, inviting people of color, the brown skin community most especially, to the table for careers in this industry. It's different than when I was growing up, that people wanted to be police officers then. With what we've seen happen and the systemic ills that have occurred over the years, and what we see happening today on our cell phones and on TV and our other technical tools that we can use with interactions between African-Americans and white police officers, I believe some of that has helped to send a message to African-Americans and Latinos that have caused us not to want to be a part of the police department. There are other, that's just one synopsis. There are other challenges that come along with that. So that's my point there, is not an end all, but certainly I think that that has helped to create what we have now, where around the country, our young folks of color are not interested like it used to be in becoming an officer. And then, of course, the danger of it now. And most times you hear that even the weapon that we carry, we're able to carry as an officer, is far less than what you are going to confront on the streets. I have a 9mm, if that's what my department carries, and I'm confronting people that have AKAs, AK-47s rather, sniper-type rifles. I mean, the firearm is not fair. We got a knife at a gunfight, let's just say, kind of scenario.
Right, and that speaks to the debate that was held on Wednesday night when they were talking about what can be done to stop the situation with these AK-47s, where and one gentleman who was on one of the talk shows this morning said, guess what? With the AK-47, you need a bullet in order to make it work. Stop selling the bullets.
Gotcha.
You know, because people were concerned about how do you confiscate, how do you get people to turn these rifles in? But if you can't buy the ammunition for it, eventually your stockpile is going to run out. But the gun issue is such a huge issue. And there's so many things that we can do as a society that we're not doing that hopefully we will do in the future. So from the NAACP's perspective, what is the next steps that your chapter is taking in order to bring about a change in your community?
So we have some wins already. The first win is that our mayor announced the day after, on that Tuesday after the shooting, that every officer will turn that camera on when they go into the community and confront situations. So that's mandatory now. Secondly, we've had two communicative meetings where we've been able to communicate to our community what we're doing, where we are. And then we've had our town hall gathering on Sunday for our community to be able to speak back to us so that we can listen. We have to now, as moving forward, we have to continue with these platforms of communication, giving our people a place to express themselves so that we learn more and we hear more in regards to the pain, the hurt, and the situations that people have gone through to bring them to the place that they are. We as well have to be communicative with our community. And so we have to be able to disseminate information in relation to the things that we're doing. Whatever that turns into, the people that we serve must know about the process and what's happening within the process. So we must do that going forward. And then, of course, we want the truth. There has to be transparency. There has to be accountability. So we're going to have to hold our mayor and hold those that are part of this process accountable to ensure that there's follow through, to ensure that we keep our hands on the pulse of things and we are creating opportunities for our community to grieve and go through that process and work our way to a place of healing. And so there are a number of things that we must do. The NAACP certainly impresses upon our city officials and our community that we are there to ensure that there is fairness and an equitable process. And so we're there to the end, and we're going to hold our mayor and others to the fire as long as we're at the table.
That is excellent. Apostle Patton, we actually have about a minute left, and I just want to let you know that we're going to invite Mayor Buttigieg to come on the program as well to give his perspective if he chooses to do so. If you can, in less than a minute, can you share with us how the world community can help South Bend, Indiana?
Yeah, certainly we would ask and solicit prayers. I believe in prayer. I'm a pastor, and prayer changes things. And so we would ask for the global community to certainly pray. There will be and may be other opportunities for the global community to get involved in regards to what's happening within our community, and it may be ways for them to be a part of the processes by certainly funding certain opportunities in that kind of respect. And so, those are ways that the global community certainly could add some value to what we're doing.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Apostle Patton, who is also the president of the South Bend, Indiana NAACP chapters, our in-studio guest today. Apostle Patton, I want to thank you for coming on the program and enlightening us about the challenges, but also the opportunity to improve the community in South Bend, Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm hope hopeful that this will be helpful to the audience that views and listens to your show. We are in a tragic place, and certainly we are working with the help of the Lord to address the challenges that we have in our city, and we're looking forward to as well recovering and being healed from this, and our city as well being a viable city to the United States of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up on this week on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. We want you to have a great weekend, but remember, leadership begins with you.